Hello, you're listening to an episode of the Safa Talents podcast series. My name is Katja, and I'm very happy that you're joining me on this journey in the Middle East. Welcome, ahlan wa sahlan, dear listeners. Today, I'm sitting with a very special woman in a very special space. Here with me is Sabine from Rays of Sunshine, Lebanon. Welcome.
Thank you. Welcome to the space.
Before we start talking about the space and how you created all this, I think we need to tell our listeners where we are. So, like, what's the context of our conversation? Yes. We are in Beirut.
Yes, we're in Beirut, very close to downtown. So, and we're in a space called Rays of Sunshine. It's what is meant to be a healing center. And it has a plant-based coffee shop, 100% plant-based, that serves sweets and a few savory things to eat.
What do you mean by plant-based?
So it's vegan, basically. But the word vegan is mostly used for animal rights, which we, of course, totally support. But the idea of this coffee shop is more for health reasons. So to move towards a vegan diet, because I really believe that it's better for our health not to be eating any animal products. So it's based from plants, and we don't use any animal, meat substitutes. So it's all really a plant-based coffee shop, that's why. And we also have a studio that has daily yoga classes and an atelier with art therapy, including drama therapy classes and painting classes.
And this is actually, it's the center of Beirut, here, where
yes.
We are. We are in a high-rise building, but it's like, it's quite a big space, and it has also an open balcony, so it's very light, it's open, it's airy. It's what you would associate a little bit with Rays of Sunshine, the title says. How did you like, from the architectural point of view, was that a leading question for you?
Yes, it was a process to come to how it looks now, because my first idea is that I wanted it to feel spacey, even though the space is not very big. And also to be bright and not to use two colors that are too bright or too warm, so something more of a pastel colors. So I ended up doing the decoration myself, because it was hard to agree. But I wanted to have a lot of like outdoor feeling even when we're inside. So that's why when you open the door of the balcony of the terrace outside, it opens completely, and it feels like the whole space is connected outside and inside. And it's still very new, but the plants that we have outside are supposed to fill the whole corners, and they're purple colors, and it's one of the colors we used for the studio. So to try to bridge between the studio and the coffee shop, because there are windows from the studio to the terrace outside of the coffee shop. So hopefully next year the plants would be bigger.
Okay. No, I can really confirm, because as soon as one comes up here on this floor and enters the space, it feels really different. Like, because Beirut is so crowded,
yeah,
and down there on the street there is so much construction work going on,
yeah,
and so many cars, and then you come up here and it's really like, whew, you can breathe.
I'm happy it feels like that. This is what I meant to create, because I mean, for a while I was working in Hamra, which is in a different area of Beirut, but it's even more crowded than here. And I remember that my feeling in these streets, and I feel it a bit here, is that you almost never see the sky, because the buildings are not always very high, but it's just that the streets are narrow and so full and crowded all the time that you just look in front of you and never look up. So I wanted to create a space that has this airy feeling that you, where you can, you have more breathe and, you know, you can breathe better. So including plants, obviously, changes the air we breathe and, yeah.
And are also like your one would not maybe, if I'm from Europe, I mean, I'm happy if I know about Lebanon. I know Beirut is the capital city. But I would definitely not expect to have a vegan, plant-based, airy center somewhere in the middle of Beirut. So is there a lot of demand also? Are there really people asking for these kinds of services and concepts?
Well, I think the vegan community is growing a lot. When I started building the project a bit more than a year ago, there were maybe two vegan restaurants in the whole country, not only in the capital. And now there are about 10 different ones around the country. So it's even easier to find options in normal restaurants because the community is being more active about spreading all the research we have now about how it's better to eat vegan, to eat to go towards a diet that does not include any animal products. And also Beirut has been known for a while. I remember when I was in university, we always noticed that there weren't any green areas around. Unless, you know, you go to certain universities and everything. So I felt that there's a need also for people to breathe better in this city, even though I love it and it has a beautiful energy, but the quality of the air is not always great.
And obviously, environmentally, yeah. Beirut is, I would say, challenging.
Yeah, it is.
Like, also health-wise, I mean, like, yeah. Wow.
I love walking, but I don't enjoy walking all the time in Beirut.
Yeah.
Because I feel that it's better to stay inside sometimes because of the pollution. So, yeah, it's good to try to be, to give a solution to the problem and not just nag about it.
But maybe it's also like so clear to you because you have been living abroad.
Yes.
Because if you, you know, if you experience some alternative possibilities, then you come up with the idea, oh, how could it work like in Beirut? So
it's true. It's true. Yeah. And I think a lot of people have done this too, but I've lived in different countries and every time in between I come back to Lebanon. So I lived in Geneva, then I came back to Lebanon for a while, then I moved to London and then came back to Lebanon and then I moved to Paris and now came back again. So every time I was able to compare what is missing here and what's the added value of the city and the country in general. So, and it's this time I feel very comfortable coming back here because it's like I made my peace with everything that's missing and decided to make something better instead of just complaining and moving away.
So actually you're ready to make a contribution now for Lebanon.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is very exciting in these times.
Yeah,
revolutionary times and also need healing energy. So I think like what for all of us, it would be really interesting because you didn't wake up as a young girl one day and said, oh, one day I want to have a healing center in the middle of Beirut, you know.
Yeah.
So you have gone also quite a long way to get to this holistic concept. Mm. So maybe if we go back to when you were still a young child growing up, You grew up in Beirut?
Yes, yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about your experience? What do you remember? What was influencing you at that time?
Yeah. Well, it's hard to pick because there are so many things. And I was born in a war and I grew up in a war. But I don't remember this only specifically because I remember the bombs hiding in shelters and everything. But it's more later when I was in school, I think, that I built my feminist views and my need to see people have more rights in general. And I remember, I think the thing that I remember the most is reading one book. I read it again now. I don't think it's that great anymore. But when I read it, it's called Never Without My Daughter.
It's famous.
And when I read it, I was not even 11. I think it was too early. But I read it and I was so angry at what I read, how the situation of this woman and how she struggled for something that is so basic as just to have a freedom of movement, the freedom to express your opinion. And I started reading more about why she went through this. And I noticed what the situation was for women in the region and for also young girls. And started noticing that they always call us princesses here in the Middle East, probably outside in the whole world now I notice, but
what do you mean by us? Like women in general.
Yeah, you are our princess, and we need to protect you. This was one of their way to justify taking a lot of power from us. Like we should treat you like a princess. So, and we protect you, and you need protection of men. And this is something that stuck with me. I don't remember when, but it's from reading everything after I read this book. And so I have friends who used to call me like the person who's always revolted. I don't know if that's the word in English, like révolté in French. That I was always annoyed at the society around me. I think I became a feminist quite early. But I was in a school that was open to that. I was in the French school in Lebanon. And there was no religion, no politics at school. So even though my parents are very religious, I'm not. So it allowed me, I think, I was luckier in a way to be able to build my own mind. So this is how I started, and so at 11 I decided I wanted to work in human rights, and obviously I didn't know what that meant. So I studied
something
law.
Like freedom or
exactly. So I just, in my head, I wanted to free women, and I wanted women to be equal, like practically in practice in law, but also in our daily lives. I didn't see the difference at the time.
So you really felt as a child that women are not free.
Yeah. And they're not treated equal. Hmm. Like, I have two brothers, and I remember that my parents didn't allow me to go out as much as they did or sleep at my friends' places. So I used to demonstrate at home, like actually have flyers and walk and like refuse to do my bed if my brothers don't do theirs, like help my mom with the dishes if my brothers don't help out. So my brothers were very responsive, my parents not as much. So I was in a constant struggle with them. My mom is probably the opposite of a feminist, so it was always very hard. So I grew up, you know, always fighting somewhere. And when I went to university, we used to demonstrate a lot against the Syrian regime in Lebanon because they were controlling the political aspect of life. So in university, and when I was studying law, it was really in downtown Beirut, also the university, not far from where we are now. So we used to always walk from university, not always, I mean, depending on how we organized as demonstrators, to Martyr Square or other places in Lebanon that have like a significance. So, but then
and that was especially against the Syrian.
Yes, at the time,
they
2005.
Said protectorate. It's like
But it was much harder than now, and that's something I was telling them because now there's a revolution going on, and we're trying to change the regime again. But I noticed the difference because when I used to demonstrate when we were in university, women had no voice. Like we were there and we always joined, but women were not speaking, taking a microphone and speaking. And they were not leading the revolution. But today they are, and that's
beautiful.
They are.
I'm really, like even what means even, but also as a European, when I went there for the first time, I was really impressed how many women there are.
Yeah.
They take the whole family and they really express their like the leading voices. In leading roles.
Yeah. And even because there are certain key areas that people, that demonstrators are trying to block, so just to make a point of actually disrupting the normal life in Lebanon, so politicians have to make a change. But most of these sit-ins are started by women, and men are acknowledging that. So 2 days ago, it was a bit scary. We were being attacked in the demonstration, and I was telling a man who had a microphone, like, we should tell people there to move behind the army. And he's like, you take the microphone and you say it. And I was shouting at the microphone, but it's a man empowering a woman, and that's very, very, like, it was impossible for a woman to take a microphone a few years. Not impossible, but it's not something that we felt comfortable doing. Like, we didn't feel like it was something, it was a power that we would have on the spot.
Yeah, it didn't come natural.
Yeah, and now they are actually empowering us. Mm. So that's, it was beautiful. And I was trying to explain that to the younger people now leading this revolution, like, so they don't take it for granted. They notice that you acknowledge you achieved something big now.
Mm. Mm. But back then that was still far, far away.
I don't remember. I hadn't realized that before. But now seeing them, I noticed that there were no women taking a microphone. There were none. I mean, it was led differently, but no women were taking the stand and just talking. It was only men.
And what was your learning from the time, from the demonstrations back then? What, as a woman, did it make some things clearer for you on your way?
It wasn't, I don't think there was a woman's perspective. It was just more about freedom in general. And that's why now I noticed that I hadn't even thought of the fact that only men were speaking. It was like maybe the normal thing. I don't know. It was politicians we knew who were talking, and all of them were men. We were always, I mean, after this period, the new elections allowed a few women to enter the parliament. And it's something we had noticed after the demonstrations, like, why aren't there any women politicians?
But there still aren't.
There aren't,
if you look at the government, it's still purely male.
There are a few women in this government, and it's a bit, I mean, the government that resigned 2 days ago.
But not on ministry level.
There are.
Oh, really?
I think 3 or 4.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, because they are 30 or something.
Yeah.
It's an amazing figure.
Yeah, it's way too big for this small country, and that's one of the aspects of this corrupt government. But I mean, it's better, but it's still a really long way from where it should be. But hopefully now with what's happening, we should see a bigger shift. Hopefully.
Yeah.
But I'm very hopeful. Like, I haven't been in a long time this hopeful.
All right.
Because I see a sense of civic duty amongst those people that I hadn't seen in a while in Lebanon.
Okay.
So it's beautiful.
I'm jumping back to where we left the scene. Like, you were demonstrating back then as a young woman, as a student.
Yeah.
What happened next that was important for you?
I think next I moved to Europe. So when I finished university, I did a training with the International Committee of the Red Cross, the ICRC, on humanitarian law, so the law of war. And I met a man who became then my husband.
Okay.
And I moved to Geneva, and I worked there.
So it was
there.
Clear for you, you wouldn't stay in Lebanon?
No, it wasn't. It just happened like that. It wasn't in my plan to leave, but I felt that I was ready to. It was. I still, now when I think of it, I don't know why. I left out of love, probably. Mm. But then when I moved to Europe, Geneva is a bit different from the rest of Europe, but it allows you to travel a lot. And I noticed everything we were missing, because I was much more attached to Lebanon at the time than I was throughout the years that came after I moved. So,
What you were missing?
I think, basic things like access to internet and electricity all the time and things like that. But as a woman, I noticed that we missed a lot of things. Like, I noticed a lot of... Switzerland is not an example, but...
It's a very special example.
Yeah, but still there, like, in the work field, because I worked with the ILO, the International Labour Organization, and I noticed not just that women were more present, women had higher positions, and women from everywhere. So women from different backgrounds, social backgrounds, different ethnicities.
So not only a small elite.
Yeah, exactly. Not just white women, as you would expect when you think of Europe. So everyone was represented in those. And I mean, it's the UN, so it's this is how it should be. So I noticed that actually we still have a long way to go. Because when you grow up in Lebanon, in this region, you feel that we have more freedom compared to other countries in the region.
Yeah.
So you feel a bit safer and the position you have as a woman in Lebanon. But then you leave the country and notice that actually, no. It's just compared to these other countries that you feel more empowered.
Yeah.
But in reality, there's still a lot to do.
But still, I mean, also the same counts for Europe.
Like, yeah. I noticed
also
that
it
later.
Really makes a difference if you're in Greece, in Finland, in Germany, wherever you are.
In the capital or outside.
Which is actually, I think, the main difference if you are in a big city or somewhere outside.
Exactly. But then after Geneva, because I didn't really like living there, I also my papers didn't work. So I came back to Beirut and I got a job at Save the Children. So... a child rights organization in Beirut. It was the regional office here. And so I started working in camps, in Palestinian camps, giving trainings on communications and advocacy. And I also traveled to Yemen, to Egypt, to Tunisia, but to places that were really poor. And especially in Yemen, it was to displaced camps and working with children in those camps. Sorry.
Was there a special reason why you chose to work with or for children?
Actually, not really. I applied for a lot of jobs because I needed to work. Okay. I would have picked more women's rights than children's rights at the time. But actually, I've been working for children's rights for 12 years now. Mm. Or 11 or something. But it's... children's rights today are where women's rights were 50 years ago, because we still don't consider children as equal. We still consider them as smaller than us, less deserving of rights. We can beat children, but we can't beat women anymore, thankfully, obviously. It's where we were a few decades ago.
So you also see a way of improvement?
Yes, of course. Okay. And I hope to do that here. I still work part-time for the NGO I was working with lately, the last 8 years. So I worked, I want to focus a little bit on the work in camps here, because this is how I decided to go back to working directly with the people. Because I feel that I made a bigger impact than the work I did later in my life, because working directly in camps and going to see those same families, the same children over and over again, you see that you're helping them in a way. It's not always a big change, but at least a lot of those children had wanted to go to school while they didn't want to before we started working with them. Or they were more eager to build the future while they were completely depressed before. And obviously, as a child, the way you express your depression is very different.
So you were working in the field and directly with children and the families?
Yeah, mostly with children, but the families are always involved. But also with the organizations who work directly with children, try to encourage them to include children in their work all the time, so not to build projects for children without them. So the hope is that children are considered as important as adults. So their opinion is considered as important as ours. Of course, in matters that affect them, but usually we don't do that. So this was a lot of the work I did here was around that, and to empower children to speak up and to express how they feel and what do they want to do next, etc.
And did you see a big difference? Because you talk about children, so that includes girls and boys.
Yes.
Did you see a big difference between how girls and how boys are treated?
Yes, of course. I mean, it depends on the country, of course. But I worked here mostly in displaced camps or refugee camps. But mostly it was displaced, so internally displaced populations. Of course, I mean, the poorer you are, the more discrimination you see in the communities. It's, I mean, it's discrimination against those boys also because you have expectations of masculinity from them. But women, girls are also, like, they're very discriminated against. They're not expected to go to schools. They're not expected to have... like to be married after 15, like you should be married earlier. In Yemen, it's a big issue. Like girls are married at 8. It's the country where they have the lower age of marriage in practice. Like I met a lot of people who married their children, their girls, when they were 8.
Similar stories from Syria.
Yes. I mean, it's in poorer communities, it's almost very similar everywhere. But Yemen is one of the poorest countries in the region. That's why you see higher numbers. And that's why it's widespread a bit more. But in Syria, they have better laws. It's just that, obviously, with everything that's been happening for the last few years, it's harder to control.
But somehow, I mean, you have been working for this NGO for in the NGO field with children for 12 years.
Yes.
And so you got to the point where you decided, I want to do something else?
Yes. But it's because after this, when I moved to London, I started working with an NGO. It's a great organization. We're very small. But it's more of a desk job where, I mean, most of my field missions were at the UN. So working with diplomats, with other international organizations. So... with time, I did this for now 9 years. It's, I felt the need to come back to work directly with people. And obviously, it's not just one reason. It's a lot of reasons after I had children and developed, you know, you change with time, obviously, and I missed working directly with people in general. And then I started doing yoga 8 years ago when I was in London, and because I had a lot of wrist issues and pain, joint issues, and yoga healed me from my physical pains at the time. And but then I had children. I had twin girls in London. But one of them was born with a genetic epilepsy that usually is not, it's dangerous. It's one of the most dangerous forms of epilepsy, but it's not fatal. But I had to leave London at the time because the health system was not good. So I had to come back to Beirut, ironically.
Because the health system here is better than...
Yeah, I mean, it's because she needed emergency care.
Oh, okay.
And here it's easier because you can call the doctor and they can tell you what to do while the ambulance is on its way. We can have a direct contact with the doctors here. So I moved back with my girls and their dad stayed behind. But from there I started, you know... It became very difficult in general. So my daughters are amazing. They're just beautiful souls. But I stayed in Lebanon for 2.5 years. I kept working for London. But it stayed as a desk job. But I was very, anyway, I was mostly at the hospital with Mia. But then she got better and we moved to Paris for, in the meantime, I separated from their dad. But we all moved to Paris for her treatment, to continue her treatment because this is where it was the best to go.
But so then, actually your life changed completely,
yes,
because you had one big issue,
yes,
where you had to care about.
Yeah. And obviously it was mostly my daughter's issue and I was just helping her through it. But then in Paris, something went wrong with her health and doctors still don't know what happened. But she spent a lot of time at the hospital and then she passed away 2 years ago almost. And but in the meantime, yeah, it's obviously the biggest trauma I could ever have. Hopefully, nothing worse is coming. But
very sorry.
Yeah, thank you. But this is how I built the center, actually. This is where everything around the center I built here started. Slowly after, obviously, because I couldn't function for a few months. But my other daughter, Ella, is the reason why I decided to do everything in the center here. So
she wanted to come back, or
yes.
Wow.
As soon as Mia, her sister, passed away, she started asking to come back to Beirut, and I think it's because she needed to be around family. And my older brother has three kids, and they treat her like she's their sibling. So
nice.
I think she needs to feel like she has siblings. So she started asking. So I wanted to move to an island. And she's like, no, if we move from Paris, we go back to Beirut. But she likes this. There's a warmth we have here. Like I've always been very critical of Lebanon, but we have qualities that I haven't found anywhere else. And
can you describe those qualities? Or how would your daughter describe them, maybe?
For her, she always says it's because of her cousins and because it's warm here in general.
But
and there's
warm
more
is
sun.
The emotional warmth,
yes,
or it's the sun?
I think she describes the sun, but in reality, she feels the warmth. Like she feels that everyone expresses their love a lot. And she always tells me, everyone loves me a lot here. And, you know?
I see the way how children are being treated here. I mean, it's similar. It's even in Europe, you know, when you go to Italy, they see children completely different.
Yeah.
But here it strikes me that I was sitting with a group of people, young people, and only one had a child. But everybody was taking care of this child. Immediately, you know, even the parents went outside, but everybody was caring.
Yeah.
So you don't see that, for example, in Europe.
Yeah.
That's also kind of warmth, of course.
It is. And I'm still discovering it now because I moved back 3.5 months ago. So when I started the center a month ago or a bit less, we opened here because we shared the space with two other companies. And some of them are people I know from before, but others are new people to us. But they care for Ella in a way I've never seen. There, like she used to be very reserved and very shy, but now she steps in the floor here and she runs to a couple of people to hug them. She never used to do that. I see a big difference. And there's a dog who's almost always here and she just plays with the dog all the time. And people come to me like, can we play with Ella? We don't want her to be bored here. And so there's so much love around and we feel it. I'm not saying that there isn't that in Europe. Like I have friends that are the most loving people I've ever met. But it's just the way there are less barriers, maybe because it's smaller. We don't have so many distances.
Yeah, and you express it differently,
yes,
like more openly.
Yeah.
It's I think Europeans are just more reserved and more shy in expressing their emotions.
Yeah.
And it goes in many directions, on the positive side as well as on
the,
I would say, critical side. Not
it's
negative,
true,
but sometimes scary when you see these emotions around.
It's true. I mean, sometimes, to be honest, when a lot of people ask me, why didn't you move back to Beirut as soon as my daughter passed away? And I think I needed to hide in Europe because a big part of me likes to be anonymous sometimes, like to be in a place where no one knows me, no one will ask me too much about my life, which is a bit annoying sometimes here. So for a while, I felt comfortable in my space where no one touches, you know, this air, this bubble I created around me. But then I felt ready to open up a bit more and talk about how I'm feeling. And this I missed in Europe. I didn't feel that I could do it. But for years, I was much more comfortable in Europe than here. Like in London, you can be completely anonymous, and I loved it. But you can always be someone very, you can also be very present and very visible to everyone. Because people in London express themselves a lot. But you can also disappear whenever you want to. And I like this.
Mm.
In Lebanon, you cannot have that.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
always... someone is looking. There's always someone you know across the corner. And it used to annoy me a lot, but now I love it because I missed it so much, I think, when I needed to open up from my bubble and express my pain. I felt very alone in Europe. But it's also because of how I grew up. Like, I grew up in a place where you can express yourself a bit more. And Ella, in the meantime, was asking me, like, she really wanted to come back to Beirut. So as I was started my healing process, I understood that I think I need to continue healing in Beirut, where, yeah, I can express whatever I need to here.
So somehow rays of sunshine is also the result of your, or like part of your own process.
Yes, yes. Because for a while, for a few months, I couldn't do yoga, even though it had been for a while a big part of, an important part of my daily life. And I just sat to do my practice and I couldn't do it. Like physically, I couldn't do it because yoga has healing powers. It's like magic. It connects you with your emotions just when you're doing physical movements, but it has much more healing effects than just, you know, building your core and your muscles. So I couldn't do it because I wasn't ready to deal with these emotions. But the only reason I wanted to continue my life and not just completely disappear was because I wanted my daughter to be happy, and I didn't, like, I felt that I couldn't save my other daughter, even though I tried, and I felt that I couldn't do anything to save her from the pain and from the illness in general. So I was like, at least now I can try not to create any pain for Ella. Like, I should never be the source of her pain. I can't protect her from outside pain, but I wanted to be a source of happiness for her. So this is how I decided to rebuild myself. Because she was also very scared that I would die too, because she had to deal with death at a very, very early stage. So I had been a vegetarian for a couple of years when I decided that, or even more. But I always believed that being vegan was the right way to do things, like for your health, for the environment, for animals. So, and I went back to my yoga, regular yoga practice, and somehow, I don't remember when, I felt like I needed to be a teacher because I believe in yoga so much because it's helped me. But one day I traveled a lot with my work, And I came back from Toronto, and I had a huge jet lag, and I was feeling very dizzy. And I decided, because some of my friends had read things I'd written, and they were like, "Ah, you should publish this." So I said, "Let's do it now." So I just created my blog in like really an hour. I wrote the article, I bought the domain and everything. I was afraid to change my mind.
Yeah, because suddenly, I mean, you make it
public. Yeah.
There is a lot of pain involved. Yeah. This is all very difficult for some people. Can't even, you know, discuss this openly with friends. And invite others to ask you questions. Yeah.
I think if I thought of it a bit too much, I wouldn't have done it.
No. But did it help also?
It did a lot. Mm. It's especially the first post. Because I had so many responses, and most of the responses were via personal messages. Because people wanted to ask, like, what are you trying? It was just about saying that I'm trying something. At the time, the pain was getting stronger and not... because anyway, when you start dealing with your pain, it somehow gets stronger because you're opening a box.
Mm.
I didn't publish a lot of posts anyway, but a lot of people kept asking me questions. And at the time, I was still seeing a therapist too, but my real therapy was my yoga teacher. I tried a few art therapy workshops in Paris, and... So I tried these things I offer here. So art therapy, yoga, I just went back to it fully.
So from your own experiences, how much it helped you, you also want to offer it to people who might need it.
Exactly. Mm. I really believe that yoga and art, and using art for therapy and changing the way you eat, it has magical healing powers, really. But of course, it's something you have to commit to. But I always also wanted to create a space where people felt comfortable, not just, you know, it can be very dry. It's not easy to create a space that is warm, especially that I wanted something very white and very clear, so it was hard to find this balance.
But it really requires a change, a complete change in your lifestyle.
Yeah.
Do you think that people in Lebanon are ready for that?
Some of them are, because, I mean, you've been here for years. We're very different. You have a lot of different layers in the society. But the people that have been coming here are all very different anyway. You don't have, like, some... You have different ages, people who do different jobs. But it's very new. So I'm hoping it will be open to a lot of people. But I'll see...
So you're actually part of some kind of a pioneer.
I hope so.
Group who,
But I think people need it because it's a very stressful city, and there's always something major going on in terms of politics, in terms of especially now.
Oh my God! Yeah.
I mean, I have to admit, I'm a bit scared now because I invested the little money you can save from working in charities here. So it's very scary because I have a daughter and rent and all that. But I'm still also positive because somehow with this revolution, it just makes you believe in people even more because the people are creating the change.
For me, you are with your story, and thank you so much for sharing your story. This is really very touching, and somebody once said to me, "Sharing is caring," and this really feels like it when I talk to you. It's like you really care about others. For me, you are, even without that story, you are a very outstanding woman here in Lebanon. I mean, I know there are women like you, so in Lebanon there are strong women, I know, but still, you are one of those that I met here. I mean, like, how easy is it as a woman to succeed in Lebanon? In the way, succeeding to do what you really want to do, whatever that is, can be very different.
I think it depends where you come from. I notice because sometimes you take it for granted, because some part of the society, like the middle class or wealthier people, you have more access because you have... you tend to be more educated, so you can think more creatively. So in this part of the society, it's easier, and you see a lot of businesses are run by women now. But in more remote areas, I think it's not that easy. There's a woman who works here at the center, and I decided to work with her on purpose because she told me her story, and she comes from a completely different part of the society. And she's very vulnerable, and she's been through a lot of tough times because she's a woman. I won't allow myself to tell her story here, but it's something, it's very sad, and like, I want her to have a job and to actually be able to free herself from the situation she's in.
Actually, law doesn't really protect women in Lebanon. It's very weak.
It is very weak. Like, my daughter is not... Her dad is French, so she's not Lebanese, because only men can give the nationality. So that's I have to apply for residency for her. But it's also like a lot of like domestic violence, marital rape are things that are still happening and protected by law in a way. Like you can find gaps to protect men from getting sentenced. So,
So as a revolutionist, let's say it like that, you are positive.
I am hopeful.
Towards the future as a feminist?
I am hopeful. I wouldn't have said it as easily a few weeks ago. But seeing those women on the streets who are coming from different backgrounds and who are leading a revolution, I think I feel much more hopeful. And anyway, I mean, if you take just 5 minutes to Google women's rights in Lebanon, we have quite a few women's rights organizations who are leading really good campaigns. So I think it's something that had started from before. But seeing people on the streets actually leading revolutions like that, like women on the streets doing that, I'm really hopeful that we can change things. And if we have more women in parliament, I think it would be much better. Let's see.
Well, thank you so much for this interview. It wasn't so much of an interview because you were just telling and I was listening and fascinated. Thank you very much.
Hope I didn't speak too much.
No, there can't be too much. I wish you all the best for your healing center.
Thank you. Thank you for being here, really. You were also part of the rays of sunshine we have here the last week.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This was a very special and touching talk for me, and I want to thank Sabine again for her trust that she shared her story with us. She did that because she cares and she knows that others might find support in what she had experienced. The interview was conducted in an open space, so I hope you could hear everything well enough. You will find some more information about Sabine, all podcasts and more articles on our website, safatalents.org. Please send me feedback and if you have recommendations and special interests. I'm Katja and I wish you a happy day.